What's next? Do you want to sing the song? On BP Oil. I saw
BP.
I've been doing a series of interviews, and I'm going to continue to.
We have
an indigenous perspective on what had happened, and then
that's good. We have two on the subject, and that one is focused directly on BP. In fact, it's called BP. Let's see. Starts on. BP, we wonder what you were drinking, for while your glasses were clinking, you drilled a hole without thinking. BP, you knew just why you were drilling. All your investors were thrilling. They knew they'd soon make a killing. But then, quite suddenly, it all disintegrated. Your men were fodder for the fish far and wide. It's just the cost of doing business, you stated. We'll plug the hole and drill another by its side. BP, you thought there'd be nothing to it. You said no problem, just screw it. But now it seems you can't do it. You say you'll pay for everybody's awful losses. $20 billion here and there won't be a drain. You'll give enormous bonus payments to your bosses, but none to all the seabirds you have slain. BP, when all the oceans are tar pits, though beaches smell like cigar pits, you'll walk around on red carpets. That's not making you happy, is it?
No, it's
You're not.
You're not
smiling.
No, no.
And good satirical songs, even some local satirical songs from the Raging Grannies. Thank you, Grannies. Hope you show up at the next trial of the people who are actually being busted for singing downtown. Well, one of whom is me, the other whom is Blind Bear Robert Facer for being around a homeless protest in front of Vice Mayor Coonerty's bookshop, Santa Cruz, way back in January. And I'll be giving you an update on that trial shortly after we do a little... Well, introductory music here. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, as probably those of you who, well, maybe you don't know, Free Radio is off the air because the transmitter location has been intimidated. The landlord there was intimidated by a second letter from the FCC. And that means, as we have been for the last month and a half, we are looking for a transmitter site. Our transmitter was evicted. We need a site on the west side, north side, or east side, not downtown, with a roof and a tree we can put an antenna on, a dry-locked, secure space for the transmitter so we can visit the area to do maintenance and repair. We need access to electricity and access to the Internet, and we will kick down an uninterruptible power source for the Internet at $50 per month for electricity usage. And how to deal with the FCC, at least how we've been dealing with them. We've continued, even though they've been able to, well, on occasion, scare some of the people who've had the transmitter in the past. And thank you for hosting the transmitters, those of you who have, when you have. But now we need somebody else to do that. And I hope that such a person comes forward. It certainly hasn't happened in the last 2 months as we've been putting out this SOS. But perhaps... now that we're actually off the air and only streaming, people will be more well, at least aware of the situation and aware of what they're losing. Let's begin with a little music, and then we'll go directly to the deputies. Well, yesterday at the Peace Camp 2010, culminating in the deputy's arrival around 11 o'clock at night. So stay tuned, and if you happen to be listening on computer and you'd like to call in, you are welcome to do so. The call-in number is 427-3772. We are streaming at freakradio.org and hope to get back on the air at 101.1 FM as soon as we can find a site to put up our antenna and place our transmitter. So if you have any help you want to provide for that, any suggestions, give a call to 427-4523, 427-4523, or else go to the website at freakradio.org, www.freakradio.org, which is where presumably you're getting this show from. Although the show will also be archived at Huff Santa Cruz, www.huffsantacruz.org, H-U-F-F, santacruz.org. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom for all you newcomers. So here's a little from Anita Coates, her album The Curse and the Gift. This one's called The Flood.
I'll find a way to build the dam. So you don't have to see what you're doing to me, and you won't have to know what's underneath. It's the flood swept me away. It's the flood that won't let go of me. I'll find the light. I'll walk away. This just isn't right. That's what they're all gonna say, and you will have to see what you're doing to me, and you won't have to know what's me away.
That was called The Flood, and it was by Anita Coates from her album, as I said before, The Curse and the Gift. So, I'm a little melancholy, but that's kind of how I'm feeling tonight, what with the word that Free Radio is off the air for the first time in, I don't know, 5 years. Well, I think it was off the air briefly at other times, but right now it looks like we are indefinitely off the air until we can get a transistor locus to place the antenna and the transistor, a transistor, transmitter. So, you know, if those of you who are regular listeners or even irregular listeners or occasional listeners are interested, now's the time to act on that interest. The number to call for the voicemail is 427-4523. The number, as I mentioned before, the web address is freakradio.org. And if you want to call this show, publicly commit yourself, what a brave move that would be. You can call our in-studio voice line, which actually isn't a voicemail, but it's an open line, and you'll be talking to people listening on the Internet, at least, and people who are listening to the archives, 427-3772, 427-3772. Well, today is, we're on August 5th already. Here's an article called Tell Me Again, What's the War About? By William Blum. Blum is a regular writer for the Counterpunch website, a left-wing website, which I follow with some regularity, perhaps too much regularity. It's good to get a little variety now and then. William actually came to our protest against the sleeping ban way back in 2004, when actually I was arrested for whispering at city council by then-mayor Scott Kennedy, with ample cheerleading from Vice Mayor Mike Rotkin at the time. We had a protest then, as we continue to have protests 6 years later now, about the incredible shelter space deficiencies, about the laws that criminalize the poor, and about the homeless death rate. And these issues, first of all, they don't really interest the city council in any meaningful way in terms of changing the local ordinances they have that might actually impact this problem, because the city council is very beholden to and sensitive to the views of conservative, frankly, NIMBY merchants and residents in town. That is my conclusion after a couple of decades of watching them. Although I'd sure like to see an extensive analysis of the backers of the current city council, the real power centers in town. There was a sort of a book done called The Leftmost City, which did some exploration of 60s and 70s and maybe even 80s stuff, but it was by academics on the Hill who didn't want to take it up to date and had very little interest in homeless issues as well, so not quite the treatment I'd hoped for. What's the War About? By William Blum. As I said, this is a guy who actually came to the homeless protest. It was called the One Dance Summit, for those of you who have long memories and happen to have been there or heard about it. Run by Richard Oxman and others, Sylvia, his partner. And he brought in a lot of lefties from different places and then supported a strong protest at city council. It was originally going to be a sleep out like we now have at the county building, but it turned out to be a speak out, and William Blum was one of the people who attended, though he seemed actually eager to get away to the place he was sleeping that night, which was at the house of Mayor Scott Kennedy. It was kind of funny. Blum, though, he seemed to be a supporter of the general issues. The One Dance Summit was sleeping with the enemy. Kennedy has long been the enemy of any meaningful reform, as most mayors of the Santa Cruz city have been and of the city council. But anyway, here's what he wrote about the war, which I guess probably everybody, even Mike Rotkin, agrees on, but of course doesn't do anything about locally when something could be done, investigating, making sure the city doesn't invest in war profiteering and providing some kind of aid and sympathy to war resistors and things of that sort. That just doesn't get done. We have a very, really fundamentally conservative city council in terms of how we contrast it with the population generally here, which I think is much more to the left. at least the parts of it that I associate with is. When facts are inconvenient, when international law, human rights, and history get in the way, when war crimes can't easily be justified or explained away, when logic doesn't help much, the current crop of American political leaders turns to what is now the old reliable, 9/11. We have to fight in Afghanistan because somehow it's tied into what happened on September 11, 2001. Here's Vice President Joe Biden. We know that it was from the space that joins Afghanistan and Pakistan that the attacks of 9/11 occurred. Here's Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina. This is the place, Afghanistan, we were attacked from in 9/11. Representative Mike Pence, third-ranking House Republican, asserted that the revelations of the WikiLeaks documents do not change his view of the Afghan conflict, nor does he expect a shift in public opinion. Back home in Indiana, people still remember where the attacks on 9/11 came from, and here's President Obama a year ago. But we must never forget this. This is not a war of choice. This is a war of necessity. Those who attacked America on 9/11 are plotting to do so again. If left unchecked, the Taliban insurgency will mean an even larger safe haven from which Al-Qaeda would plot to kill more Americans. And here is the president 2 days after the release of the WikiLeaks documents, referring to Afghanistan and Pakistan. WikiLeaks, by the way, for those who don't know, is a mass of documents, sort of like the old Pentagon Papers during the Vietnam War, previously classified, in fact still classified, which showed the sort of seamy side of the, shall we say, institutionalized murder and occupation of Afghanistan. I like to call it that because that seems to me to be what it is on a mass scale. Here's the president 2 days after the release of the WikiLeaks documents referring to Afghanistan and Pakistan as the region from which the 9/11 attacks were waged and other attacks against the United States and our friends and allies have been planned. Never mind that out of the tens of thousands of people the United States and the NATO front have killed in Afghanistan, not one has been identified as having had anything to do with the events of September 11, 2001. Never mind that the plot to kill Americans in 2001 was devised in Germany and Spain and the United States more than in Afghanistan. Why hasn't Washington bombed these countries? Indeed, what actually is needed to buy airline tickets and take flying lessons in the United States? A room with some chairs? What does an even larger safe haven mean? A larger room with more chairs? Perhaps a blackboard? Terrorists intent upon attacking the United States can meet almost anywhere, with Afghanistan probably being one of the worst places for them, given the American occupation. There are many people in Afghanistan and Pakistan, the ones still living, who deeply resent the U.S. presence there and the drones that fly overhead and drop bombs on their houses, their wedding parties, their funerals, their life. As in Iraq, the American war on terrorism in Afghanistan regularly, routinely, and conspicuously creates numerous new anti-American terrorists. The only war of necessity that draws the United States to Afghanistan is the need for protected oil and gas pipelines from the Caspian Sea area, the establishment of military bases in this country that is surrounded by the oil-rich Caspian Sea and Persian Gulf regions, and making it easier to watch and pressure next-door Iran. What more could any respectable imperialist nation desire? Oh, did I mention that the military-industrial security intelligence complex and its shareholders will be further enriched? But the war against the Taliban can't be won, except perhaps by killing everyone in Afghanistan. The United States should negotiate the pipelines with the Taliban as the Clinton administration tried to do without success, then get out and declare victory. Barack Obama can surely deliver an eloquent victory speech, and I believe William Blum voted for Barack Obama, unless I'm mistaken. So I hope that he's certainly making a nice speech now, and I'm glad he did, because I think that, I think I agree with him. A second article here, which I think I'll hold off on this one. It looked interesting to me, an avoidable depression. But let's avoid that particular one. And here's a little something that's a little more pertinent. It's called Rationalizing the Bombing of Hiroshima, which is, of course, tomorrow will be the anniversary of the U.S., the only country that's ever dropped a nuclear weapon on Hiroshima. the U.S.'s dropping of the A-bomb for the first time on Hiroshima, Japan, on the civilian population. A test, you see. Confronting a Mindset by Susan Gallimore. Imagine the power to erase in 9 seconds more than 200,000 human beings and everything surrounding them within a 2-mile radius. Then imagine that power magnified many times over. Then understand that we, the people, are represented by those who are capable of destroying far more people and property in less time. For according to President Bill Clinton and reiterated by Barack Obama, nuclear weapons are the cornerstone of the policies of the United States of America, that protector of the tired, the poor, the huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Every day of the last 65 years since August 6th and August 9th, when the U.S. dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we have continued to design, test, develop, and stockpile ever more awesome nuclear weapons. Researchers at the nonprofit think tanks Tri-Valley, based in Livermore, California, found that, contrary to their assumptions, Congress, the Pentagon, and the President do not commission such weaponry. We found, says Executive Director Maria Kelly, that members of the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory rather forcefully sell ideas for and promote weapons to the U.S. government. We'd always thought that the lab responded to the sorts of weapons these entities wanted, but found that the opposite is true. The weapon labs at Lawrence Livermore and Los Alamos really are the taproot of the nuclear arms race. It began during the Cold War, and Kelly says this one-nation nuclear arms race has continued ever since. As long as these labs are unimpeded, that taproot of continued weapons design and development will flourish. There are three main test facilities that simulate nuclear explosions and develop ever more sophisticated and lethal weapons. The Nevada test site has an underground subcritical test facility. Los Alamos Laboratory has a new hydro test facility dedicated to the beginning stages of nuclear weapons explosions. Lawrence Livermore Laboratory has an ignitions facility that explores the physics of nuclear weapons with respect to the later stages of nuclear explosions. This testing has, to date, cost the American taxpayer more than $90 billion. Well, that's about, 10 months of the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. I guess it's not that much, is it? And that does not take into account the cost of cleaning up the environment and addressing current and future health. Developing this ever-growing arsenal pumps out an ever-growing amount of mortally toxic material. Lawrence Livermore tests estimate the radiation dose beyond the heat of the blast released in Hiroshima deposited about 1 million curies. One curie of radiation is 37 billion radioactive disintegrations per second. Radiation has a half-life of 28,000 years. The Tri-Valley CARES documents that more than 1 million curies of radiation have escaped from this laboratory into surrounding communities. During tests performed at the lab Site 300, located in the hills between the cities of Livermore and Tracy, non-fissile depleted uranium replaces plutonium-239, the fissile material in the core of a nuclear bomb, and is exploded on outdoor firing tables to atomize into the wind. Not only is there no workable long-term safe solution to deal with toxic materials, including plutonium, tritium, the radioactive hydrogen of the hydrogen bomb, uranium, and cesium, cleanup is endless. There are already tens of thousands of known Superfund and National Priorities List sites around the U.S., according to EPA officials in the GOA's report, Superfund, EPA's estimated costs to remediate existing sites exceed current funding levels, and more sites are expected to be added to the national priorities list. And actually, this story goes on at some length, but getting back to Hiroshima, if we the people are unaware of this ongoing pollution, so too have we lost sight of our history. How many Americans understand that bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki had almost nothing to do with the end of World War II? Rather, these horrific deeds positioned the U.S. so that we would not have to share influence with the Soviet Union and Asia. The A-bombs were used to intimidate the Soviets for the post-war period. The Emperor of Japan understood by 1944 that the war was lost. He changed governments, and the mandate of the new Japanese government was to negotiate a peace treaty with the U.S. with a fundamental condition that the emperor remain on the throne and avoid a trial as a war criminal. General, later President Dwight D. Eisenhower, opposed dropping the A-bomb. Quote, Japan was at the moment seeking some way to surrender with minimum loss of face. It wasn't necessary to hit them with that awful thing. Admiral William D. Leahy, former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said, The use of this barbarous weapon at Hiroshima and Nagasaki was of no material assistance in our war against the Japanese, already defeated and ready to surrender. In being the first to use it, we had adopted an ethical standard common to the barbarians of the Dark Ages. I was taught not to make war in that fashion, and wars cannot be won by destroying women and children. J. Samuel Walker, chief historian of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, said that while experts continue to disagree on some issues, critical questions have been answered, among them that alternatives to the bomb existed and that President Truman and his advisors knew it. Yet powerful forces within the U.S. continue to fight against the American people understanding this history. In 1993, the Smithsonian, for example, suggested they launch a major exhibit as an opportunity for people to understand more deeply the effects of the atomic bomb and to surface the circumstances surrounding its use. Controversy ensued for 2 years and included 24 members of Congress sending a letter on August 10, 1994, to the Smithsonian expressing, quote, concern and dismay that the planned exhibit portrays Japan, quote, more as an innocent victim than a ruthless aggressor in World War II. The Smithsonian canceled the greater exhibit on January 30, 1995, and began work on a completely different plan, one that displayed only the Enola Gay, the airplane that dropped the bombs. When even that trimmed-down, more palatable exhibition finally closed in May 1998, it had drawn almost 4 million visitors. Imagine if the original exhibit had gone ahead as envisioned, 4 million Americans would better understand how deeply enmeshed we are in war as a nation and a society. Perhaps then we would face real facts and remove our sense of legitimacy in preparing for a nuclear holocaust. As director of programs of the American Friends Service Committee in New England and the American Friends Service Committee's National Disarmament Coordinator, Dr. Joseph Gerson advances U.S. and international movements for the abolition of nuclear weapons and the ratification of the Limited New START Treaty. He served as co-convener of the 2010 Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty Review International Planning Committee. During this service, a U.S. senator's aide told Gerson that the bombing of Hiroshima was right. This, he says, reflects enormous ignorance 65 years after the cataclysmic events in Japan. The reality is that each thermonuclear weapon today has the capability to kill far more people than were killed at Auschwitz. Yet such genocidal, if not omnicidal, weapons are the cornerstone of U.S. policies. It is in every American's interest to understand this element in our society and to transform it. The opportunity is there. For the last 55 years, there has been an annual international conference to commemorate what were, says Gerson, war crimes in the memory of the victims of those war crimes and to press for the abolition of nuclear weapons. In a recent Raising Sand radio interview, Gerson told of his first visit to Hiroshima 25 years ago. I fully engage with the pain of what happened there and with the ongoing damage, including genetic, from radiation. While there, however, he did not dream at all. After he returned to the U.S., his dreams returned, and at first they were crowded with images of cinders and destruction. But the waking image I had was of the colors and angles of the peace crane, symbols of peace and affirmation of life. The U.S. signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Essential elements of this, one of the seminal treaties of the 20th century, are that one, non-nuclear nations excepting Israel, Pakistan, and India commit to obtain, not to obtain, nuclear weapons. Nuclear and two, nuclear nations promise that they would A, provide technology and recognize the inalienable right of all nations to produce nuclear power for peaceful purposes, and B, engage in good faith negotiations to completely eliminate their own nuclear arsenals. When non-nuclear nations see the nuclear nations ignore the second premise, Article 6, they suggest it undermines their commitment when they are threatened by nuclear nations. So despite President Obama's rhetoric, the May 2010 conference saw the U.S. beat back the non-aligned and other non-nuclear nations, pressing for a mandate that nuclear nations negotiate to eliminate their nuclear arsenals. As signatory to the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, the Senate has never ratified it. The U.S. abides by the letter of the law by following the moratorium on above-ground testing. It does not, however, abide by the spirit of the law when it tests nuclear weapons components, simulates explosions, and extrapolates the results to develop yet more deadly weaponry. During May's review conference, the Arab League initiated a demand, followed by the non-aligned nations, toward a nuclear-free zone in the Middle East. Israel balked. Dr. Gerson said the Obama administration is not particularly interested in this either, although it finally agreed to the demand in order to advance Obama's larger strategies and to avoid the collapse of the conference. Israel finally agreed and is now named in the document. While it is dispiriting to see how little progress has been made towards a nuclear weapons-free Earth in the 65 years, perhaps one could take comfort in such micro-increments. If Israel is finally named in the latest treaty document, despite the deep consternation within that country and within the American community, for which Israel can do no wrong, or for whom Israel can do no wrong, perhaps there is a glimmer of hope. Moreover, Hiroshima is today a beautiful modern city, and the Japanese, a community that knows deeply, genetically, the reality behind nuclear warfare, have a deep commitment to life and a peaceful world. Perhaps there is hope for humanity. I don't know about that one. Susan Gallimore, author of Long Time Passing, Mothers Speak About War and Terror, host of Stanford University's Raising Sand Radio, former military mom, GI rights counselor, born in apartheid South Africa, lived in Israel from 75 to 77, and visited again in 2005. And that whole story is on counterpunch.org. A little music, and then I will, I promise, get to some voices from Peace Camp 2010 and surrounding stuff.
What can I say? I don't like leaving you. What can I say? It's so hard when you have to go. It's so hard when you
And that was another one by Anita Coates. Stay. All right, you're listening to a stream of the twice-weekly show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. This is the August 5th, 2010 edition. And now I'm going to take you back to Tuesday. I guess it was August 3rd. That was the day that we, myself and Robert Facer, also known as Blind Bear, a gentle Amish drummer who walks around barefoot and sleeps outside and apparently designs his own canoes and paddles around and gets tickets from the city for essentially doing nothing but normal life-sustaining behavior, which bothers no one but officious bureaucrats and, frankly, control-freak cops and rangers who I think have better things to do with our money and their time. But in any case, the two of us were on trial for singing songs downtown at a protest around the homeless death rate from last year. And the protest happened on January 6th. That we were given citations because one member of the public who was trying to do some day sleeping two stories up, without warning us, told us that we had been singing for 4 hours, which we hadn't. We got there at 1:30 and he informed us at 3, and we'd been singing sporadically throughout that period of time in a way we usually do, that we were informed by the police it was unreasonably disturbing noise, and we've been running through court ever since on that issue. There were four of us charged. One was there at the time, and one has been convicted because she woke this guy up from his sleep, or he couldn't get back, he couldn't get to sleep in the middle of the day in an apartment overlooking Pacific Avenue with his window initially open without warning anybody. It was a ridiculous decision. The judge who made that decision, Judge Almquist, passed by today, and I introduced him to everybody as the judge who criminalized singing on Pacific Avenue. Now, of course, listeners may say, hey, what do you mean? There are a lot of people singing and no one's being bothered. No one's being dragged off that I can see. And that truth is, you don't really see those who are dragged off. They're just sort of told to, they aren't really dragged off either. They become complicit in their own removal, because that's what police do. They use private complaints about, we don't like the noise, even though the noise, the music, is a natural part, an important part of the scene in Santa Cruz. In fact, the First Amendment protected part, if anybody had the resources to do it, maybe we will find those resources. We're looking for them now to do that kind of defense. It's a natural part of the scene which one part of the society wishes to criminalize, or give the police and private hecklers the power to criminalize. So anyway, this was a trial that was continues to be postponed. It was scheduled for the 3rd, last Tuesday. We showed up again, and again we were stalled and delayed, and the trial was again postponed, which was not entirely something I regretted, although in a way I did, because to have the thing over would be a good idea. It's very wearisome, and it takes up a lot of time and energy, and I seem to spend more energy avoiding working on this case and then working feverishly on it in the last few days before the court date, and then finding the whole thing gets postponed again. But there's an important issue here, and the issue is whether private hecklers can use the police and vice versa to shut down political and artistic protests or exhibitions downtown from poor people. Poor people don't have the resources to hire a hall. They don't have the resources to do gigs in nightclubs so much. They use the street. They busk. And political protesters who sing even less well than those who are, doing so for a living, though not badly. And the Raging Grannies, I wouldn't say, is, the most melodic group in the world. But, they do pretty well. If you were listening to the show that preceded this one, you heard them. In fact, we were trying to enlist the Raging Grannies to come and sing with us. They came and sang at the trial of Wes Modes, and I think that's what they were. That was the song they were singing about, Give Me a Ticket, for those of you who were listening an hour ago. Modes was still going to court again for walking in a parade, supposedly with knowledge that it did not have a permit, as every other previous parade at the New Year's Eve for the last 5 years has not had a permit. real attempt to power trip and discourage activism in Santa Cruz that isn't controlled by the Downtown Association or the city council or the city staff's multifarious agencies, the Parks and Rec, or the established groups that actually aren't even providing any New Year's activities. They went bankrupt. They couldn't do it. So the people themselves took it over and did a DIY do-it-yourself parade. Anyway, the Raging Grannies sang at the West Modes trial, and we'll hear more about that, about the trial. I guess it'll be coming up again in a couple, in about a week or two, the conclusion of the trial. There's also an injunction coming up, which attorney Jonathan Gettleman has filed on behalf of Modes against this law that he's accused of violating, this parading without a permit or parading with knowledge that you don't have a permit. I've announced publicly that I'm not, I was in the New Year's parade and I didn't have a permit. I'm not sure if I knew they had one or not. I think there was some controversy in the paper about it, and I hadn't heard they'd gotten one, so I guess you might say I knew they didn't have one. I mean, it's a little hard to say because my memory's a little foggy about it, but the whole thing is ridiculous and simply a device to go after activists, just as I believe this sinister sidewalk singing citation trial went after myself and Becky Johnson, who were two of the activists who were targeted here. So the other city attorney's boondoggle expedition against Wes Modes is an attempt to get after a guy who has organized the Free School, the Sub Rosa Cafe, at least been an instrumental in these activities, the Trash Orchestra, and a number of other DIY, do-it-yourself kind of activities that think very little of the city council and the city government. And I suppose now that's regarded as suspicious behavior. Anyway, here is the aftermath. We were told again that the trial in the courtroom of referee, or I should say Commissioner Kim Baskett, was again going to be postponed, initially because they had problems with the recording devices. And, you know, that can happen. I can appreciate that. But I found it very disrespectful that the commissioner told us we were keeping, I think, 8 or 9 witnesses in the corridors of the courtroom waiting outside there. And they were, some of them had jobs they had to get to, and we're losing money being there. One of our key witnesses had to leave. And I told that to the judge after there had been a 20-minute delay, or actually it was a 40-minute delay. And she said, well, if either of your witnesses that can't wait, then we'll have to postpone the trial. I said, fine, we'll postpone the trial. And then she changed her mind, said, no, meet us upstairs in another courtroom where we can get the court at 11 o'clock. We'd started at 10. We can use it. There'll be recording operational material, operational instruments that we can use, and therefore we can go ahead with the trial. We did that. We showed up at 11, even though she'd told us, you know, I told her my witnesses, at least some of them couldn't be available. She kept us waiting another hour, and then she apologized. Instead of walking out into the hallway and saying, it looks like we can't do this, my apologies, go home, or come back again, you know, another time, or the attorneys can deal with the situation, you can let all your witnesses go. She had absolutely no consideration for the people involved, and I found that really quite a contrast to her very smooth, smiling exterior, really trying to be helpful, really expressing this concerned attitude toward the defendants. Frankly, bullshit is the word that comes to mind. So, should I call her Bullshit Basket? I don't know. I'll have to think about that. I want to be fair. I don't mind being harsh if it's appropriate. When I say artichoke heart attic, I mean it because of his behavior in the case of Sandy Loringer, who was feeding homeless people, and he gave her a jail sentence because she said, I will continue to feed people if you give me probation. And he said, that wouldn't be obeying all laws. So I don't mind calling judges by appellations, nicknames that adequately and properly describe them, and also hopefully remove some of the mystification and false respect that people have for these folks in these offices. It's just not appropriate in many cases, generally speaking. Anyway, here we go. Enough of me. You're actually going to hear more of me, whether you like it or not, but you'll hear a few words from other people, too.
Fry outside the courtroom here. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah. Well, another more.
This is Attorney Ed Fry, who is defending Robert Facer. I was defending myself, and we're talking about this, again, delayed trial.
Hey, hurry up and wait some more. That's about all we got. Right. So, justice is delayed, but partially at our request, so I can't complain too heavily.
Right.
And how about Robert Blybear? Or did you make a
What's your impression of all the proceedings?
I really don't have any comment at this time.
You'll be coming back for another citation at 1:30 this afternoon, right?
Right.
Yeah.
What crimes have you been engaging in? And now, what's going on here?
I haven't actually done anything wrong at all.
That's right. Oh, for heaven's sake, there he is.
Have you
the
done
patent of innocence.
I've done a lot of things. I don't know whether I've done anything right. I have to get a later.
You're charged with sitting on the sidewalk, are you not, sir?
Yes, I am. I'm charged with sitting on the sidewalk. I believe they're going to dismiss that charge.
And that wasn't it the infamous day of the drum circle route, when the drum circle was driven from parking lot 9 to the town clock, Scribner Park, here, there, and everywhere.
That was the day, and it was our last shot at probably about 8 o'clock at night. Four or five of us assembled on Pacific Avenue, and we were there about 5 minutes, and the police arrived, and like we normally would do, you know, we asked them, what right do you have to do this, and they said, well, you're sitting less than 14 feet from a payphone.
Well, I'm not a gorilla.
And so they wrote us all tickets.
So you were guilty, in other words, of criminal.
What was your trial, Robert?
Payphone sitting. It's not a trial. It's
interesting to note that we're talking about the, I think it's Walnut and Pacific. There's a corner there where there's a silver shop, if you're familiar with Pacific Avenue. And there are frequently groups that are playing music, some of them sitting, some of them standing. Some of them with what's called display devices, such as an open hat seeking arm, seeking donations, or a table. They don't get ticketed. This, however, was a group of musicians who had tried to play the drums, which they had been driven out of the farmer's market, and then driven out of the spot near the farmer's market, and then driven out of the parking lot across from Elm Street by police, threatening them with the same unreasonably disturbing noise law that they were using against myself and Becky Johnson on January 6th, and finally driving very diminished band of drummers to this corner where, you know, there's a payphone. And, of course, all of these new rules that set up massive interlacing forbidden zones on Pacific Avenue are designed to give the police the maximum power to move along people they don't like to see down there. And this, that's what we call selective enforcement. It's discriminatory. It's kind of class warfare, because usually people who get the brunt of this are poor people, counterculture people. And Robert Blindbear Facer is a sort of a very, kind of looks like a woodsman. He has this all sort of dark green outfit on with a feather in his cap and so forth. And he's... looks like he'd blend in well with the trees. But apparently he's considered to be a discordant element downtown. He got a ticket for sitting on the sidewalk. And as far as I know, he was told to come back but to the court to find out what happened with his ticket. This is another example of Kim Baskett's double-tongued approach, apparently, although maybe something new came up that I didn't know about. She told us, with me in the courtroom and Robert in the courtroom, were co-defendants in this sinister singing case on the homeless songs in front of the bookshop, that she would dismiss this ticket for sitting on the sidewalk that he got a month or two ago as the police cracked down on the final remnants of the drum circle at that time. But when he got there, he was told he'd have to come back again just to have the ticket dismissed, if in fact that was her intention. So if you're feeling sympathetic for these judges, I'd say it's time to stop that sympathy right now.
He dismissed at 1:30. That's what she said.
She said the folks in to support you, Robert.
Well, okay, great. I appreciate all the support I can get. I don't think the officer that wrote the citation is going to show up.
You have reason to believe that? You have some intelligence that leads you to believe that?
Well, that's what the judge told me.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you very much.
So it's about 1:30, and I got a further report from Curb Hugger, who was noticing an unusual procedure that the county employees were using this morning at the courthouse. What was that procedure, Chris?
Oh, well, normally they 7 o'clock in the morning, that's kind of our deadline to get the steps and the ramps clear for them so we're not obstructing the business of the courts. And normally at that point at 7 a.m., they just come and unlock all the doors along the front of the building. And this morning they didn't unlock any of them, and instead they forced everybody to wait in line. And then a fellow who I strongly suspect is some sort of spokesman for the county, because I've seen him giving interviews before, had to come out and let everybody in one group at a time. Very unusual procedure. There was no need for it, and I pointed out to our attorney to bear witness that there was no need for it. The steps and ramps were clear. There was nobody impeding the way, but he was acting as if there were a problem. He was behaving in such a way as if like there was some massive crowd out there or somehow. And then later on, after that monkey business was over and they finally did unlock all the front doors, he walked around and took a whole lot of pictures of us. So obviously he's got to burn his bonnet about something. But I just wanted to point out to our attorney and make him bear witness that there was no need for the procedure. There was no burning need. All the ramps and the steps were clear and everybody had fine access to the courts. It was just something. He was almost creating an artificial traffic jam, And I strongly suspect that might have been his point.
Hmm. Ask him next time, and we'll get the full story.
Yeah, he's a very friendly guy. I have a feeling he's not going to speak to us, but I'll try.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
Good.
Here I am at the Peace Camp 2010. It's about 20 to 11 on, August 4th. I'm talking with...
Red.
And her pooch.
Wiley.
You guys came from the levee because you got tickets?
Yes. We were camped in here for a while because we had a 35-foot purple school bus, and it got towed, and they wouldn't sell it back to us, and then they wouldn't let us get our possessions off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so we ended up sleeping on a levee. And we are Wiley because her mommy couldn't take care of her, so she gave it to us, and she's like 8 months old.
How many were you when sleeping on the levee?
There's me and my husband, Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you talked to Crow many times.
Oh, I know Crow.
Yeah.
I think if it's the same Crow,
yeah.
I know.
Yes, his Crow, yeah.
So that was so his bus was taken from?
Our bus, yes.
I guess, I'd heard about that.
He got towed, and actually towed it, and they said they were going to sell it back to us, so we made a bid on it, and so the guy went on vacation. It was going to be back to Friday, but I told Crow to call early on Wednesday to make sure they were still standing. He said they don't take bids over the phone. I said, well, we already made a bid, and guy accepted it, and it was gone. It's already gone.
Wow. How long had they held it?
I have about a month or two.
Now you're on foot.
Yeah, and they wouldn't even let her get our personal items off the bus.
So last night you were on the levee?
We've been on the levee for a month or so,
And you've gotten, how many tickets down there?
We got first ones today,
What were the tickets for?
For sleeping outside.
And what time of day or night did you get those tickets?
It was in mid-afternoon.
Did you have a big campsite, or were you just sleeping with a sleeping bag?
We just had a blanket, and we had a shopping cart with food, and our little doggy. We had to sleep and make it out, and I fell asleep while he went to work.
And what kind of work does Crow do?
He's a mechanic. He's a superior mechanic. He can work on any kind of vehicle, buses, Porsches, anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's a master mechanic.
And he was working on a car, and I was waiting for him to come back from work. And then he came back, and we both got tickets for camping out.
Who were the officers who gave you the tickets?
He was wearing a green uniform, so I guess it was the...
The Ranger?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, yeah.
John Wallace, perhaps?
Probably, yeah.
Kind of a stocky fellow?
Yeah, yeah.
Muscular?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Could have been John.
Yeah.
So what did he say to you? Did he give you a place to sleep? Or?
Yeah, he said, yeah, it looks like you guys camping out, and I'm giving you a ticket.
Charming.
Yeah, and he's like, I was waiting for you to come back, and it's like, is it daytime? We're going to grab some blanket, and like, nobody can sleep and grab some blanket during the daytime.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you. And we've been talking with?
Red.
Thanks, Red.
Yeah.
So I'm here with another one of those overnight campers, but you actually have a, you know, a other place to stay, but you choose to stay here.
Before we go on to that second interview, and this is about an hour before the police, actually half an hour before the deputies showed up in force last night at Peace Camp 2010, you'll hear Crow later explain that Ranger Wallace wasn't actually giving a sleeping ban or camping ban ticket, but a sleeping in a forbidden area, on the levee area ticket, which, you know, it's like I told Sean Riley, the guy who's filed this lawsuit or this, he's gotten the city attorney to file a criminal charge against me for singing songs downtown. If you're disturbed by what I'm doing, although I may, you know, I might tell you to fuck off, I suppose, but I, you know, I, not necessarily. Come and tell me that you are, and, you know, we can, you know, maybe we can work it out. Maybe not. Similarly with Wallace, Wallace didn't give this, Chief Ranger Wallace, if that's who it was who gave the citation, whoever gave it, didn't say, you know, you're in a forbidden area, you have to move over there. Instead, he just cited them. And in a way, I suppose, if you're looking at it legally, some people at Peace Camp 2010 are suggesting, well, the more tickets, the better, because that increases the, you know, the documentation for the subsequent lawsuit. And indeed, I hope there is a subsequent lawsuit, and there may well be. There are attorneys from out of town who've done successful lawsuits in other cities, like San Diego, who've expressed a desire to help out. But in all candor, we still need the local attorneys to be able to come forward to do it. And Ed Fry is a brave and overtaxed man who's kind of a serves a whole bunch of functions. He's attorney for the damned. He's watchkeeper to the Peace Camp 2010. He's porta potty provider. He's he does a whole bunch of things, and it's unrealistic to expect Ed to take on new work, but if there's a consortium of attorneys out there who want to help out, that would be great. And maybe that's going to happen. I'm glad to see Jonathan Gettleman doing an injunction proceeding against the parade downtown. If there's no permit and you know it, you know, get a fine, even if hundreds of other people are doing the same thing. And even if the police have chosen not to stop the parade, and even if you do it months later and selectively target and harass the leaders, particularly those leaders who have exposed police department chicanery, as Wes Modes has done in the incident, in the infamous political surveillance and spying scandal of 2005-2006, which you can read about on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. So again, you are not tuned to 101.1 FM because we aren't on the air. If you want us back on the air, we need a place to put up an antenna and locate the transmitter, because we don't have a place right now. We are, of course, streaming on the Internet, hopefully. And if for those who are interested, you can call in at 427-3772. So do so if you'd like to comment on anything or add any thoughts. Here's some more stuff from last night at Peace Camp 2010 and some more dialogue.
I do.
What is your name, sir?
And I also enjoy keeping the peace. I'm learning how to keep peace better than I have before.
This is Ed Fry himself speaking.
Interesting. With such a varied group of people, not particularly happy with laws or rules, it's kind of a task. And again, we're talking with
Ed Fry,
the devil behind this demonic encampment.
That's right. I stand accused and convicted.
Indeed, I understand you spoke to the board of stupid vipers, I mean supervisors, on Tuesday.
Yes, and I didn't call any names.
Certainly not. This is a group that I have the utmost respect for and always will.
I asked them not to allow the sheriffs to enforce laws against innocent people.
Particularly city laws. What are they doing in trying to enforce the city laws? Let the city police enforce
them. Not so much city, county, it's just they're innocent
of any
crime. And that's the point. And that's why the sheriff should not get involved and join the Santa Cruz police in breaching the peace every night.
And naturally they all stood up and applauded and gave their firm promise that would not happen.
Oh, in fact, they started parading around the room in huzzas of Ed Fry.
Right. Of course, we're kidding around here, I'm quite sure. But you say that around 6:30 there was a group that came to the campsite
this morning,
tonight?
As we were all starting to wake up, or some of us were starting to wake up, a big van, the U-Haul van, and it was being pulled by a trailer, was being pulled by a big RV or whatever. And out piles 16 teenage kids, and they open up the van, the trailer, and out they bring out these tables and a big stove, camp stove. It looked like a xylophone, this stove. It was huge. And they proceeded to make us breakfast of eggs and sausage and bacon and potatoes and pancakes. I mean, it was amazing. They're from the Church of the Nazarene in Reading.
Wow.
They're between the ages of 14 and 19 or 20. And they're on a summer, outing and calling it out for Christ, And oh, it was wonderful. Yeah. And then they came back tonight to visit and to, enjoy.
Tomorrow morning is the question.
Who knows? It's possible. I'm not going to count on it, but you never know. Yeah, it's great. It's a wonderful communal feeling.
Yeah. Wow, and you've been sleeping here, on and off for the last 3 or 4 nights?
Yes.
Because you want to keep an eye on things, because you think there may be a ticketing expedition.
Yeah, and also, like I said, to help keep the peace, make sure that things go smoothly. It's a huge job, and Chris was feeling overwhelmed, I think, a little bit, now and then, about that responsibility. Because he's got some deputies, but, they're not as strong as they could be, might be. So it's good for me to be here and learn how to deal with these folks who are acting out or shouting or whatever.
What have been the principal problems of the last few days?
Drunkenness and loud, boisterous discussions, arguments. Physical threats now and then.
And what do you do when these problems come up? Do you have a particular approach? Or?
Oh, no, it depends on the situation.
Very situational.
I try to be peaceful, obviously, but it doesn't always work. So I switch to a little more firmness.
Well, I notice there seem to be more women here than there have been in the past.
Yes, that's true.
Now, any concerns during the day that have come up, or have you been around much?
During the day, we did the drum circle today.
Here. How big was the drum circle?
It got bigger as the afternoon went on. I left at about 5:15 or so, but it was going strong then, and it was about 6 or 8 drummers drumming when we came back at 8. So
he busted up his hand. He got jumped by a bunch of kids. That's why they all went running off.
Was it under this big tree here, or was it closer to the building? I'm kind of pointing to a tree.
Oh, see where the olive trees are? It was right down on the flat, right even with
the. About the same place as last week, then.
I guess. I don't know. I didn't see last week's.
Now, was there a second drum circle somewhere else?
Yeah, there was, over by the river.
Was it the same old place, or did they move it?
I'm not sure. I wasn't there. I don't know. But it's somewhere by the river. Yeah.
Well, Peace Camp 2010 continues.
On and on.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Kerbugger Chris, who's just trying to get a little sleep. Before Kerbugger Chris gets into his riff here, if you're interested in hearing Ed Fry, or I should say in reading some of Ed Fry's writing, some of the speeches he's made, of course, I've played his interviews here on Free Radio, but there is a website that's a good one to go to in order to get more info about Peace Camp 2010 and read some documents, including Ed Fry's writings. That's peacecamp2010.blogspot.com, peacecamp2010.blogspot.com. I've actually been writing on there myself. Another good website to go to is indybay.org/Santa Cruz, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, and just check out some of the recent stories there.
He
has a number of complaints about this, the media, which seems to be harassing him, and not only that, disturbing his sleep.
I'm just trying to get some sleep.
Exactly. So no longer is it going to be a case where any particular reporter can grab you at any time of the day or night. You are going to get everybody together with a little organized press conference.
Press briefings at 10 o'clock in the morning on the courthouse steps.
Will coffee be served?
Square, be there, you just lose out in that day's story. That's it. That's it.
Media take note.
Yeah, that's it. That probably won't hold. They ruined my life.
Now you say that for today there was 100 people at some one point at the protest?
Just about, yeah. That's our official peace camp estimate. We couldn't count them. They were moving around too much, but...
A large Christian group showed up and was serving,
yeah.
You said, served three meals, breakfast, lunch, and then cocoa?
No, they didn't serve the lunch. Renee Curry served the lunch officially. I guess he'd be the midday meal or whatever. It was the burritos, peanut butter, jelly sandwiches, donuts, coffee, and chai tea by Renee Curry. That would have been lunch. They served dinner. They served barbecue chicken, but they didn't cook it here. The breakfast they actually cooked on site.
And the cocoa?
The cocoa was good. They served that at the very end. They came to participate. I guess the kids wanted to participate in the drum circle, so they came and milled about for about an hour or so, and then they served hot chocolate and coffee.
All right. Well, we're going to let you get a little rest here, Chris. Indeed.
We're having another report from a man who's known as Crow. Crow, you said you and your schnookums were sleeping on the levee and got ticketed for sleeping in a restricted area.
Yeah, restricted area. He was going to give us a camping ticket, but decided to give us a ticket for being in a restricted area.
Is this Ranger John Wallace?
That's Mr. Wallace.
Well, he's got his eye on you there, Chris.
Yeah, I guess the big eye on me now.
Sure, yes.
And then after we moved out of there and went over to the big lawn area behind the municipal building, we had all our stuff there. And
the county building?
Yeah, you know, the big lawn area back over there.
San Lorenzo Park.
Yeah, San Lorenzo Park lawn area. And he came back and said, it looks like we're camping with all our stuff. And told my girlfriend, because I wasn't there, that we had to move because... It looked like we were camping, but we stayed there all day. I said, fuck Wallace, you know, so.
Perhaps the good ranger was bluffing.
No, I think he was bluffing, because I would love him to give me a ticket for camping, you know, during the daytime at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you know.
You have to prove you intended to remain overnight.
Oh, yeah, I guess he would have to prove it, but... We're not there. We're here.
Here we are. And here you do intend to remain.
Yes, we're planning to sleep tonight and hopefully get tickets and get arrested and challenge Santa Cruz municipality about this sleeping man. Be nice.
Indeed. Glad to hear it, Crow.
Yes, we're here.
Thank you.
We're here to stay.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, brother.
Crow, before you go, you were
present
at the last sleepout in 2007. How does this compare with that one?
Well, we do what we can do, and this one's getting blown out. I like it, you know. Blown up, whatever.
Getting bigger, you know?
Yeah, it's getting bigger. And it's nice, you know. It's, you know, and I think...
Porta potty here.
I know.
A lot, last time you were useful in helping to get a porta potty.
Yeah,
so you didn't get a porta potty, you actually had a van.
I had a bus, a school bus that let everybody take a dump in and had biodegradable bags in a bucket. You know, and
how well did that work? Of course, we only went out for 6 days. This has been here for a month now.
I know. This is really great. The porta potty is great. I hope they, you know, can afford the rent and hope people donate to the cause. You know, because I will once I get some money. So.
So it looks like there's four deputies sort of wandering the lot.
And now begins around 11 o'clock, the slightly after, when the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance come into force. It becomes illegal to sleep outside, in, on, or under any structure, or just outside, or in a vehicle, or in any building that's not a domicile. very broad law, and it covers a lot of private as well as public property, though it does have some exceptions, backyards and fenced inside and front yards not visible from the street, church parking lots, if you are in a vehicle, three to a church parking lot, two to a business parking lot, private driveways in a vehicle for only 3 nights per calendar month. I think that's it for the exceptions. So for 1,500 to 2,000 people, there are no exceptions. There's just hiding out or getting out. And or there's Peace Camp 2010, which people went to last night. And here's the description and discussion of the deputy's second raid. They had raided before, I should say. They had arrived before and began interrogating people, gently interrogating them, asking them. But when you have four or five uniformed men with guns and flashlights and badges and uniforms waking you up in the middle of the night, it's difficult to assert your rights and say, I'm going back to sleep, deputies, do what you need to do. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm legal. And the basic strategy here, which you will hear, is that because it has been acknowledged there's no shelter, there was no shelter on the night of August 4th when this deputy raid happened last night, nor was there in any other night after the armory closed, I think it was April 15th or something, nor will there be until November 15th, except if you get on a waiting list and hang out for a while, and sometimes it can be as much as, I don't know, a month or two before you can get into a shelter for a period of time, but for the people at that campsite, there was no legal shelter. So for deputies to run around, give citations with no legal shelter is bad enough. But even worse is knowing that when these tickets go to court, two judges, Commissioner Baskett and Judge Ariadne Simons, have stated that if they're given a letter from the Homeless Service Center that says there were no beds, no shelter that night, then they will dismiss the tickets. So even though everyone knows, the shelters, the police, the courts, that there is no shelter, they're forcing homeless people to run through this charade of going to court, making a court date or paying a bail, going back to the Homeless Service Center, finding someone, getting them to write up a specific excuse, or there was no a little superfluous piece of paper that says there was no shelter, taking it back to court, presenting it there, and all the while knowing that the tickets are going to be dismissed. So these deputies are actually engaging in harassment for things that are not crimes, because if the tickets are going to be dismissed, the actions are not criminal. I mean, at least that seems to be the common sense interpretation of it. So knowing that, you can hear more of what follows in this second deputy incursion on Peace Camp 2010.
Here, but they haven't reached the Peace Camp 2010 on the steps and on the pathway up to the... What? No, I'm checking out the deputies here. So I'm just kind of checking out what deputies here are surrounding some campers or sleepers and asking some questions, it appears, here on a platform, which is near the, sort of on an island in front of the county building. And it looks like they're making some notations.
See, that's kind of trading on your reputation. I'm kind of interested.
Looks like the same four deputies, or perhaps at least two of the same deputies who were here the other night, and we've got three different sleepers that are being, two of them are being interrogated right now, ID checked and so forth. And over at this second sleeping bag, these two additional deputies are again interrogating someone with getting an ID and making notes and so forth. And they're trying to take photos and give warnings
Actually, I'm not sure. I haven't heard a warning yet, but... And the time is... it's just after 11 o'clock, so the camping ordinance, the city's camping ordinance, has come into play at this point. And the deputies, although one... It's interesting the deputies are enforcing this and not city police. And they approach another camper here who's camped next to this large sort of rock monument. Looks like unless you're being arrested, you don't have to show ID. But the folks who are sleeping are showing their ID anyway, which, of course, is up to them.
And a lot of this begins very low-key, but it gets more heated as this series of wake-ups go on. I want to announce, I just got an email. I wasn't aware of this. There is a meeting tonight, according to this email, of Americans for Safe Access, the group trying to lobby for more protection for medical marijuana patients. And the email reads, the Santa Cruz chapter's meeting is going to be tonight, 7 p.m., at the Greenway Compassionate Relief in Santa Cruz at 140 Du Bois Street, Suite A, Santa Cruz, California. And there's a link to maps if you happen to have this email. All are welcome. Feel free to invite anyone. Tell your friends to come out. Do your part to stop prohibition. And they're thinking of having, I think, a benefit, and that's from Matt Roth, Lewis Roth, and Roger Mensch, who's under attack, the last one, Roger Mensch, for his work with the Hemporium, a medical marijuana distribution service up in Felton. I've asked Roger to come on the show, and occasionally has, but he hasn't been responding recently. Maybe too busy with legal problems, who knows. But if anybody's interested, get out there to Greenway Compassionate Relief, the Greenway Club, where there's a meeting of the ASA. They usually have some cookies and snacks, and they also are concerned about issues, I think, that are very important. I have mixed feelings about dividing the medical marijuana from the broader marijuana movement, and I have mixed feelings about Greenway as a club and how it's essentially supported a monopoly position for our duopoly position for it and Ken Sampson's club and not stood up to the city council with its absurd prohibitionist ban on new dispensaries, as well as Lisa's failure to return phone call after phone call about these issues over the last 3 years. And her claim that she never got anything, which I find really hard to believe. But she seems friendly enough when you come to the meeting. She's a friendly person in person, and hard not to like her. Anyway, check that out if you're interested. 140 Du Bois Street, Suite A, Santa Cruz, 95070. Back to Peace Camp and the arrival, or I should say the steady march of the deputies last night at the county building. Amidst the sleepers.
And we're seeing the same process here. The two deputies by flashlight are writing out the details of innocent homeless people sleeping who they are disturbing at night, apparently under orders from their superiors. One wonders how they'd feel if people were knocking on their door at 11:30, taking their name and their ID when they had no legal place to sleep.
I was saying, making these comments into my tape recorder, I sound relatively quiet, but the deputies were right next to me as I did. They were like, you know, 2 or 3 feet away. We were very close to each other, clustered around these sleepers. It has to be said, the deputies were far less, how would you put it, dickish, bullish, demanding of distance between you and them than city police engaging in enforcement activity, though the deputies were not engaging in enforcement activity. They were supposedly just warning people, again, in this absurd kind of comedy, this absurd, it's not even a comedy, farce is right the right word, of telling people they're engaging in a criminal act which they can't possibly be convicted of if they come to court with the news that everyone knows already that there's no shelter.
One has to say this is being done in a sort of a low-key, quiet way. I'm walking with two of the deputies who are asking another individual what's going on.
My name is Robert Gideon. I'm with Sheriff.
Don't have to give your ID unless you want to. These are voluntary stops. You don't have to answer any questions unless you want to. That's my understanding. And we have a number of witnesses. We have a City on a Hill Press reporter taking some pictures.
There was a woman who has been at the camp for a while with City on a Hill Press, although City on a Hill, the UCSC weekly paper, is not publishing. She is planning to do apparently a relatively long article on the issue in September when the paper resumes.
If there's no public shelter space tonight, then this is not a crime.
And this is Ed Fry, who for the first time is begins to speak up, and he becomes more and more militant and upset and determined, angry is the word, at how the deputies are proceeding, even though they're simply sort of methodically, you know, removing every one of their rights and waking people up from their sleep. Their right to be left alone, their right to privacy, their right not to be harassed over something that they can't possibly be convicted of, given the circumstances with the shelter emergency in the county and the lack of shelter space.
There's a defense of necessity. She is innocent. Unless you can prove to her that there is a shelter space available.
This is Ed Fry speaking.
There isn't one.
The deputy is ignoring Mr. Fry's comments. And though this is being done in low tones...
Who are you protecting and serving? I'm just curious. This is against the Constitution. This is a complete lie, and you know it, dude. You guys, who are you protecting and serving?
And this is another angry person who, well, who's upset by what the police are doing and is speaking out about it. The deputies, I should say.
Seriously, I want to know who you're protecting and serving. I'm your taxpayer. I pay your taxes. I paid $50,000 last year in taxes to you. Where's my protection and service at? What, just because I look like a squatter, you won't answer my questions?
These are peace officers. They're breaching the peace.
This is not peace. Well, how can you bring peace to when you're handcuffing somebody who's sleeping?
Well, they're just interrogating.
How can you bring peace? You have no peace in your heart, sir. I wish you love, prosperity, peace, and joy in your life, sir.
Should be made clear that the police are not handcuffing anyone, arresting anyone, or citing anyone. But this seems to be preparation to a citation, unnecessary citations. They're taking people's pictures. They're interrogating them late at night. They're waking them up. And I had thought that this wasn't as serious a thing, perhaps, as it might be, because I'm used to protests and getting wakened up by the police of this sort of thing. I've been involved in these kinds of protests over the last 20 years. But I learned later that some of the people who the police were waking up were ill. And, in fact, that one woman who was actually taken to the hospital 40 minutes later with some kind of a heart problem, perhaps as a consequence of the deputies disturbing her in the middle of her sleep. It may become a tricky situation for the deputies, given the fact that these folks have no other legal shelter than the ones they are creating here themselves at night with their own facilities. Porta potty is not being supported or funded by the county or the city or any other government agency, but by private individuals and being brought there by Ed Fry, the man you hear talking about the right of these people to be left alone.
If you were a true spiritual warrior, you'd put down your pen and you'd be the man you're supposed to be. Do you believe in Jesus? Jesus would not give a ticket to a homeless man. Do you believe in Buddha? Buddha would not give a ticket to his homeless man. Do you believe in Allah? Allah would not give a ticket to his homeless man, sir. Who do you believe you are? Because I know who I am. I'm a human being, just like this lady is here, the sweetheart who's sitting here.
They're taking photos and putting a name.
That you want to pretend that you have nothing.
Tag next to each of the people.
Who are you? Who do you
in order to give pictures of the photos.
You don't serve the mass.
Giving names with the photos. It's not clear, though, that citations are being issued yet. I think that these are still warnings.
Bankers, man, paid and bought for by bankers.
And this is upsetting some of the local residents here who are trying to sleep. And now the deputies are moving into the main group to begin to continue this process. People do not have to give their names. They do not have to say who they are, answer any questions unless you are being told you're being cited. Be advised.
Man's a sick person. He's got a chronic illness.
He's got a chronic illness. Remember what you're doing now. He needs his sleep.
Pardon me, sir. You okay? Hello?
And the deputy is...
This is kind of a tactic by the deputies, kind of speaking more loudly to the man whose name is Orbit, by the way. I think he spoke at City Council the week before when the Peace Camp 2010 marched on City Council. He was sick. I saw him the next morning, and it turns out he doesn't even remember anything that happened. He was so ill. But this device of pretending you're helping someone when you're talking loudly to them to wake them up as essentially part of your established routine of running around and putting everybody's name and photograph in a computer as part of a ultimate scheme to drive them away from the county property without any kind of alternatives, mostly through scaring them, not through any real legal process that's legitimate even, but just a pseudo-legal process, a phony process. It seems particularly hypocritical for the deputies to be doing this, even though they're doing so with apparent respect and with a certain gentleness and so forth. And at one point I actually shook one of the deputies' hands because he wanted me to shake his hand. I told him I was shaking the hand of the man, not of the guy in the uniform who was engaging in abusive behavior towards people. It's really hard to make those distinctions.
He needs to be left alone. He's sick.
Sir?
Leave him alone.
Yes.
He's sick. Let him sleep.
Good try, speaking out.
Are you giving warnings or citations?
Just talking to
okay. Well, it's voluntary then. If people don't want to speak, they don't have to.
19-7.
So according to the deputies, they aren't giving citations. You don't have to speak to them unless you want to. You don't have to have your picture taken unless you want to.
Can I come and wake you up when you go to sleep?
So again, folks, if you don't want your photo taken or you don't want to give information, you don't have to. Just say you prefer not to. And turn away if you don't want your picture taken, because they'll take it anyway. So.
Uh-huh.
So they're not giving out citations yet, as I understand it. So. And some of the folks are giving their names. And so you don't have to give your name, and you don't have to say who you are unless you want to. You don't have to give
it.
There was a lot of tape after that, but unfortunately the machine didn't catch it. But there was the deputies went all the way around the building, and they were pursued by about 7 or 8 campers, including Ed Fry, who was advising people that, and very angrily advising people that they had the right to say nothing to the deputies, that the deputies were disturbing people's sleep without any legitimate cause. Innocent people were being wakened up and forced to talk to them. And Ed was very upset and spoke quite candidly and quite loudly to the deputies. And I've never seen quite a scene as that. Very impressive. Did you hear any of that?
I watched everything. It's just like the line, no man's land between Venice and Santa Monica. If you slept right on the line, Venice didn't want to write you a ticket because you knew where you were sleeping, and Santa Monica didn't want to write you a ticket because you knew where you were sleeping. And if you've been one of those old fishermen that have been laying there for years, well, they never write you a ticket. And whoever you got with you never get a ticket either. So no man's land, that's all it was, you know, was that floating political line right, you know, 1 foot in front of their noses.
Well, this isn't really that line. I mean, they are coming and they're preparing to write tickets, but I was really impressed with, I was a little frightened by the way people were getting angry. I'm kind of middle class in my sensibilities. I'm not used to, you know, loudly fighting and shouting back. And,
well, I think it was great that all the fuel was fueling each other and it was staying in balance. And, you know, everybody was getting their show. You know, they're seven men and they're us and the us. And nobody went to jail, although the worst they can do is cite us.
And they didn't do any citing, and in fact,
no.
People had a right to say nothing, and that's what
they really are.
Attorney Ed Fry kept telling people.
Right, actually, they are looking out for us in the long run. From there to there, none of these little girls are going to get have any trouble. You know what I mean? So it is a safe place
here in the at this particular place.
This is the only safe place in town right now.
It is really a safe place,
right? And I'm out here, so you know the young girls. I'm introducing myself to everybody, of course. And it is a safe place.
We've been talking with
Dreamcatcher.
Thank you, Dreamcatcher. We actually we have one of the men who, shall we say, pursued the deputies around the building rather outspokenly.
Well, thank you. My name is Rick Breinhuber.
And Rick, what was your concern?
Well, I used to be homeless, actually. 97, 98 after high school. I graduated in 96. I was, you know, homeless squatter in many different places in Pennsylvania and out here. And, like, it was never a crime. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's like this huge, big thing in Venice and Santa Monica. And, like, now up here, it's like, why do you have to mess with somebody who's already, like, having issues with security and being comfortable in their own skin? Or maybe they're comfortable this way. Who cares? Why do you have to mess with them? You know, like, we have a right under the Constitution to be free. That's what our whole point is, to have the pursuit of happiness. And if somebody's genuinely happy being on the streets, I can't see why you should write somebody a ticket. I don't care what... even if there was chaos going on here, I don't see any point of coming up here, because if there were chaos, you would have fires to deal with, I'm sure, right?
You don't really have much chaos. You have a lot of people trying to sleep.
I think so. Yeah, I'm a loudmouth, so I have my... You know.
Is he a loudmouth?
Yes, he is.
So I thought some of the things you said were quite pertinent, nonetheless.
Okay, thank you. I do appreciate that, and I do have a passion for this. I think people need to really wake up. I hope that this is the wake-up call. Maybe people really need to see that, you know, when you see five supposed cops, they're wearing state... looks like maybe state cops.
But they're military. Local deputies.
They're supposed to be local deputies. Those look like military police. Those don't look like local deputies. They're all wearing the same boots. They're all sitting there when you're talking to them. It's like, dude, who are you really serving? They won't answer you. They'll lip questions to you. Like, are you going to cite anybody? And they lip, no, I'm not going to cite anybody. So, like, then why are you doing it then? If you're not going to cite anybody and you're taking pictures of people like cattle, like...
Oh, they're preparing to cite them later.
That's yeah, right. It's like, I'm showing evidence that you've been sleeping here for a period of time. Like, really? Like, who cares? Is that... So that is a crime, huh? So,
in Santa Cruz.
Now, the funny thing was, is this is on the record. Now, we watched, her and I, Amanda, and myself here, we watched the cops. Now, they watched us get out of a Prius and never dare said anything to us. And they saw us put stuff in there, but yet they would go out of their way to talk to everyone else, and everyone else was standing up. They didn't talk to, didn't say anything.
Right,
to.
Because they were gathering evidence of people who were lying down and
yeah.
sleeping with the idea of not ticketing them now, but I think they want to scare people away from this protest, or they're planning, ultimately, the city police are going to come and give tickets, or maybe the deputies will. It's but I think it's interesting. The more people stand up and start organizing around this and understand this is only a small part of a broader issue in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. criminalization of poor people, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's for sleeping or for sitting near a building or for
right.
peacefully spare changing or performing on the street.
I'm a street performer. That's what I do for fun and for free, and sometimes I get paid for it, you know, but it keeps food in my belly while I'm out traveling and having fun. So, like, it's messing with my livelihood there, and, like, I have a regular job. I'm a sales professional. Like, I'm a business real estate guy. That's what I do, and I like to be here and support people because it makes a difference to me.
Is this your first night here?
This is my first night, like, hanging out here. Like, I was really kind of impressed with a lot of the people here up in Santa Cruz. They're really kind of...
Are you from Santa Cruz?
No, I'd like to be.
Are you? I mean, are you going to hang out here for a while? Or are you just
yeah,
going
I think
through?
So. I really want to stay here for a bit. I know I'm going to go back to Los Angeles for a little bit. I have family and friends down there, so I mean, I've been in L.A. for over almost 13 years
now. Are you associated with this questionable person?
Oh, what was the question?
Are you associated with me?
Yes. We're complicated.
So you think you'll be hanging out here for
I'd like to see this resolved. I'd like to see this fruition. I think at some point, although I might not be able to be consecutively here night after night, I need to bring fruit to you guys from Southern California. Maybe I need to go pick some oranges from some trees, and or maybe go and find something else to bring up here to you guys. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people that need love here. Those cops need love. Do you feel me? I mean, those cops, seriously, like, that, how sad is that? That here you are, you swore a vow to protect and serve the folks. And you have folks that are saying, like, hey, this isn't protecting and serving, and all you can do is stand silent and just keep doing your drone of, let me just be a cop, be.
Like, standard procedure, sir, standard procedure.
You know, speaking of standard procedures, there was a place I went to, which I will leave nameless, followed standard procedure today because I looked like I was homeless today, and she still charged me the $15 because I was supposedly out of town. I'm like, oh, okay. All right, cool. I hide in plain sight. I'm a very wealthy man, and I hide in plain sight. And I don't mean wealthy by monetary standards. I mean wealthy in soul and heart. You can never take that away. And that's what happens here. And when you see people showing up here, what I mean by here, on this beautiful grounds here, people are trying to have fun and enjoying themselves, that's true wealth. This is the true wealth. These are the true wealth. These are like, in like India, these would be like the denouncers, because they understand the machine's screwed up. They get it. I get it. You know, and I played the machine. I know what it's like getting credit card debt. I know what it's like to have the truck repoed. I know what that's like. I know what it's like living on the streets. You know, I've been there, and I've had the other side of it. But I realize, like, these people here are just finding what works for them. That's all they're doing. And I pray that those cops find what worked for them, because that doesn't work for me. Maybe it works for them. Maybe they go to sleep and they have lollipop dreams. I don't know. I hope not. I mean, I would seriously hope that they have a couple nightmares.
Probably have good dreams, but I haven't really interviewed them on that subject. Maybe I should. We've been talking with
Rick Brandhuber.
And do you have anything you wish to say to add to this maelstrom?
No. Yes. Well,
what's your name?
My name is Amanda. Do I have to smell?
You don't have to say anything.
Okay.
You are free to speak or not to speak. Can I take a picture?
I just think, what kind of world do we live in where you can have 1% of the population owning 90-something percent of the wealth, and then they can go and make it a crime to have nothing, and you have nothing except for the blanket over your back on the street, and they're going to make that a crime? It's like, that just seems so backward. I mean, it's just crazy.
Mr. Fun, Becky, five deputies.
I mean, it's really sad. And it would be really good to see more people down here supporting these guys, you know, because, I mean, it could be anybody, you know. Everybody right now knows somebody who's lost a job, who's going through hard times, or maybe has mental illness, or what, for whatever reason, they're down and out, and it could be anybody, and you're already down and out, and now you're making it a crime, you know. It's like, what else can you do? So.
Thank you. We've been talking with?
Amanda.
Thanks, Amanda. We're here at the Peace Camp 2010. It's about 8:10 in the morning after the roust, and here comes a parking attendant who looks like he's about to give a ticket to the
PNG. Porta pod.
Porta pod.
Is there a ticket to porta pod?
I don't know. Sure, what's happened to Ed? Yeah.
That's great.
Right.
Excellent.
He just barked the tire.
This is the next morning. The porta potty is left there every night by Ed Fry, who then picks it up in the morning, and it's left in the loading zone, the passenger loading zone, which isn't used at night, and I'm not even aware that it's active at night. And the fellow who does the normal marking of tires and giving of citations, he's a pretty nasty character. At least on the occasions I have had contact with him, generally, although there have been some exceptions. Some people have said some positive things to say about him. It has to be said, as far as I know, no citations have been given out to people sleeping in their vehicles, although it's quite legal, and it's not legal to sleep in your vehicle at night, but it is legal to park at night in the county parking lot. And he's he may be deterred by the publicity. He may be deterred by his conscience. Who knows? I can't say for sure. You're tuned to Freak Radio Santa Cruz on the Internet, We're at freakradio.org. We are not broadcasting at 101.1 FM, but this is going to be archived at huffsantacruz.org, which is where I guess, well, it's likely that anybody who's listening to this show is listening to it, because I don't think we have a very large audience here tonight. I have gotten one call, and I am about to make a call to Peace Camp 2010 to get an update from them. There's some concern that there'll be a return of the deputies tonight, but others think it's not going to happen for a number of days because the deputies showed a marked reluctance to, became increasingly reluctant to even wake up people, even talk to them, try to get their name and take their picture, when it became clear that everyone else was getting angry about it and that an attorney was denouncing them for doing it because the process could only lead to a not guilty verdict anyway, and so the people were innocent. Now, whether the technical argument will probably be something like this, while you can prove someone is not guilty by what's called an affirmative defense of necessity, which means that you acknowledge that people did some kind of criminal activity technically, but they had to do it, then the ticket is dismissed. That doesn't mean that there's not a crime initially, and that may be what they're going to claim. We'll see.
All right, so will the porta potty be picking up some people in the loading zone is the question. It looks like the ticketeer Supreme, who's a little fellow who rolls around on a porta potty, I mean on a a mobile item.
And this is all from this morning, the morning of August 5th, at the Peace Camp 2010.
He's
the porta potty getting a ticket, sir.
And he's being asked a question.
No ticket today? Thank you.
You have a nice day.
I guess because he sees Ed here, he decided he's not going to ticket the porta pot. Thank God for that.
Could be, yes. Well, actually, due to your question as well, I think. So, Orbit, I was about to ask you before this rude interruption from the potential ticketing of the porta potty, although it is 10 minutes.
Shitty thing.
It is a shitty thing.
Yeah.
It's 10 minutes after the actual court. Actually, a courthouse is opened at 8, and we're here about 8:10. But last night you were trying to sleep, and you were awakened from your sleep.
A couple times by my own ailments and disorder.
What illness do you have?
I had an excellent attorney that was sleeping next to me. I heard.
No, man. What illness did you have?
Morgellon's disease. I have not been officially diagnosed yet.
I mean, you don't look like you're in the best of health, but you weren't feeling well last night.
I woke up a couple times because of it, but the rouse that everybody was talking about, thank God I slept through that. I was sleeping next to attorney Ed Fry here, and everybody's saying, yeah, Chris said that Ed was protecting me last night when it came to his waking morning. He said, that man needs his sleep, and they're right, I'm sick, you know, I'm a sick man, I do need my sleep.
So you were actually surrounded by deputies, but when all the hubbub, you didn't even wake up, eh?
No, I slept solid, I was so beat. It was, you know, I can only walk so much, I got a bad back, too. So I got a lot of pain during the day, and now, you know, I got a terminal illness now. I got 5 to 7 years, and maybe treatments might be able to stretch me out to 12 to 14 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And this was Orbit, who was actually the first person that had...
Actually sleeping like 5 feet from me, by the way, just so you know.
I'm sorry. We have on the line with us Curb Hugger Chris, and we're broadcasting...
we are live from Peace
Camp
2010.
Hang on, Chris. We're streaming from, you know, from a studio hidden somewhere in the bowels of Santa Cruz, but we aren't on the on the actual radio. But we have you on the line. What's happening, Kerbugger Chris?
Well, we're just another night of Peace Camp 2010. We made the front page of the Register Pajoronian, or whatever
Pajoronian?
They call it.
Pajoronian. Pajoronian. Or as one person used to call it, the Bajoronian.
Well, they gave us the front page, the headline beneath the fold, and a beautiful color picture of Peace Camp 2010 above the fold. So
it's really hard to find the Pajoronian anywhere in Santa Cruz, but maybe I can look around for it.
Well, wherever all the people who live in Pajoronia can now come on down to Peace Camp 2010. And bring
it's actually a Watsonville paper, but yeah.
Oh, is it? All right. Well, who go figure.
So Chris, you're a man who spent a lot of time at Peace Camp. You've often spoken about Peace Camp. I want to communicate to you that I did receive an email from our distinguished mayor, Mike Rotkin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, what Mike had to say, you may remember you actually spoke with him in the studio about 3 or 4 weeks ago in a debate.
Oh, I remember it well.
Mike was sent an email by me because I signed your online petition. I am a concerned citizen writing to you in support of the demands of Peace Camp 2010. I ask that you end the sleeping camping ban and amnesty all tickets ever written for these laws. Your continued support of these hideous laws is a violation of the U.S. Constitution as well as the U.N. Human Rights Accord. And would you like to know what Mike's response was?
What was that?
Well, Mayor Mike's response was, "Dear Robert, thanks for taking the time to write us. I could not disagree more on every point in your letter." Mike Rotkin. And in response to that, I turned around and wrote him another response to his response. Would you like to know what that was?
Sure.
"I'm surprised and actually pleased to see you responding individually to these concerns. Perhaps you'd like to briefly justify how police can legitimately cite or harass people for a, quote, crime that everyone knows will be dismissed when the ticket reaches court because of the summer-long shelter shortage. Do you claim that there are actually beds available any nights between April 15th and November 15th? If so, which nights and which beds? Brief responses are okay. Let me know. Your fan, Robert."
Your fan.
Actually, I didn't sign it "your fan," but...
You know, I don't know what to say. I really don't. I mean, clearly, you know, there are people in this world who just don't get it, you know? I mean, we deal with them down here. You know, we have, county workers that absolutely, you know, look at us with contempt. They yell and scream at us and tell us we should get gone and... basically break all the rules, too, because they've been told not only to not speak about us to the press, which they do regularly, and with great relish and detail of how horrible we are, but, they also aren't supposed to incite us. They aren't supposed to yell at us and try to incite us, and they do on a regular basis.
Has any of that, Chris, has any of that happened today or not?
Yeah, in fact, yes, there was an incident today, of yelling out the window, and then there was also the same person actually spoke with Jennifer Squires, and I was like, "Oh, the window lady," and because she actually described her as a person who sits up there with her window open all day long, and I was like, "Oh yeah, we know the window lady. Trust me, she chases us out into the parking lot when we get interviewed." So,
well, make sure you don't start singing, or she might really get you. That's what happens to us on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, well, we know what happens to singers in Santa Cruz, and I think Mike is showing his true colors. I think that you should publicize that exchange to the greatest extent possible, because I think the person of average, even intelligence, can see, exactly what's going on here. You've got a petty tyrant who could care less about has blatantly said, "I could care less about, human rights courts or UN human rights commissions or any of that." He doesn't even want to hear it. He just dismisses it out of hand while there are people down here suffering.
Well, maybe
as soon as we released our press release from the raid last night, of course.
You have that? Actually, the press release, is that online? I could read it, I suppose.
Sent it to you in the email. You should have a copy of it.
Take a look at it. I was thinking, we've talked earlier, Chris, about, I know you led a march, or actually it was Colette who led the march, 72-year-old woman, I'm not sure how old
she is.
That's
correct, yeah, that's correct.
You know, who led the march to the city council's last regular meeting of the summer, though they had another meeting two nights ago to impose new rental inspection costs, fines, and requirements on people.
More laws, as usual. This is their answer to everything.
Right, but I mean, I was thinking, we talked about, doing a march possibly to the mayor's office, possibly to the homeless service center, because today I and Ed Fry and Linda LeMaster, who's actually in the studio with me, a longtime activist, went to the homeless services center to find out with Orbit, the ill person who was awakened by the deputies who Ed Fry was trying to defend from that situation, if they had a bed for him tonight. And they said, no, there are no beds at all for the, there's no walk-in shelter for the summer. I think that's what was said. Linda, check out that mic over there. Do you remember the specific wording?
Hi, Mike.
Hey, I'm...
Yeah, so do you remember the wording of what was said by Daniel, the individual we spoke to?
Yes, he said, there are no walk-in shelter beds here. And then he said some about there aren't any kind of emergency sleeping spaces until the armory's open.
Which would be in November. We asked him to write out a statement to that effect, and he declined to do that. He instead sort of kicked us upstairs. Go ahead, Linda, you had a thought on that.
Yeah, somehow Robert cajoled him into giving a copy with the word void written over it of the form letter that they will give to someone who's given a ticket for camping, sleeping, or covering up after they get the ticket. So they have the truck over there to the shelter, and they can get this thing which will cause them in court to have it dismissed. And he refused, and he restated himself a couple times. He said, no, I can't sign this about tonight, even though I just said there would be no shelter here. I can only do it in response to a citation number and a client coming in here and giving me their name. And so it just, you know, like, it's already absurd, but I think this makes it a lot more obviously absurdist that the whole supposed liberalization of the camping ban in terms of people not being hassled when there are no shelter beds, how perverse it has become is even more obvious now than it has been all along.
I'm going to just break in real quick, because I'm going to go ahead and let you guys go. I think Linda's got a great show planned for you, Robert, and if you don't need any more Peace Camp news. But I just want to say something that, you know, we will be marching on the Homeless Service Center, and I think it's part and parcel what you guys went through today of what I've been saying all along. These people are not the friends of the homeless. They are not helping the homeless people. What little they provide in a very miserly way, in a very miserly fashion, and only the most desperate even bothered to even go to them for help. And you know, if they were on our side, they would write us anything we asked for. If they were on our side, they would open up the locker they got filled with emergency blankets and sent about two dozen of them down here because we've been begging for them for weeks. You know, if they were really on the side of the homeless, they'd all be down here sleeping in sleeping bags and ready to get tickets with us. So I'll just let it go at that. They've never been the friends of the homeless. The place should be bulldozed. All of those people up there should be fired, and we should start over with a system of this all volunteer and run by homeless for homeless, but all volunteer, no money involved, no paid positions, and do exactly what we're doing down here tonight at Peace Camp 2010. We're having a good old time. Everybody's hanging out and grooving and carrying on and doing their thing. And you know, we're taking care of each other and we're taking care of ourselves, and we don't need the nanny state to tell us what to do. We don't need the nanny service center, you know, to take care of us. So I'll leave it at that. And
before you
guys have a great show. I'm really sorry you're out there off the air. I can't believe nobody would give.
Before you go, Chris, let me ask: how's the spirit of the folks considering the raids by the deputies last night?
Defiant and angry, to be honest with you. Angry that, you know, we had to, you know, call an ambulance and call the paramedics of Santa Cruz to come down here and take care of one of our protesters because they were surrounded by armed constabulary. We have that on video. We have Diane being accosted on video by four deputy sheriffs and Ed begging them to please leave her alone because she wasn't well. 45 minutes later or less, she was treated by Santa Cruz paramedics on the concourse here in front of the courthouse and hauled away in an ambulance. It would seem, anyway, in duress from, the incident, the incursion into Peace Camp 2010. Again, we condemn this. This is a human rights violation, even though they're only videotaping. To wake somebody up, to touch them, to assault them, in essence, and awaken them in the middle of the night is an assault and battery. It's excessive use of police force, and it's a violation of human rights. So, you know, we know what
we're
fighting
for. How's Diane doing now? How's she doing at this point?
She's still recovering, to be honest with you. It was a very stressful night for her. And one of the reasons she's here is because she's around people who care about her and make her feel safe. And we make her feel safer than the cops make her feel, because now she doesn't feel safe. She feels like the cops are her enemy, and as most of the homeless and street people do, to be honest with you. And that's a paradigm that's got to change. And I think if Peace Camp 2010 stands for anything bigger than the sleep ban, that's what we stand for. We stand for a change in the paradigm of how people are looked at, how people are viewed. You know, one person's garbage is another person's belongings, man. And when they look down from the window and they take pictures of us and they say this place is strewn with garbage, I challenge Jennifer Squires to come down here. I told her, I said, you come anytime, day or night, surprise us. Don't even warn us that you're coming. Bring Dan, the photographer, down here and take pictures of every square inch of this right up close. And all you will see is people's belongings. You know, there's no garbage down here. This is one of the cleanest occupations I've ever been involved in, to be honest with you. And I've been involved in a few, so.
You know, Dan, the photographer, was there this morning. Did you know that?
No, I didn't, but God bless him. The Sentinel's been giving us, I mean, God, I think we've been in every one this week.
I talked to him. I sent him one good picture from the midnight raid.
So it may be showing up in the paper tomorrow, but please don't hold your breath and hope that you're going to get a good story.
Oh, I don't. You and I always disagree about that. I think they're all good. I don't care what they say about it. I just want people to know about Peace Camp 2010 because I think, you see, unlike many folks in this world, I believe that the common man out there who's listening to this broadcast and who comes and learns about Peace Camp 2010 is able to judge for themselves the bullshit from the truth. And I think anybody who visits more than 10 minutes down here will see that these are good people, and as Ed was saying over and over again to the police last night, these are innocent people. These are people who I believe in all my heart and soul, and so does our lawyer, believe that they are constitutionally gathered assembly of people seeking redress from their government. And these are law-abiding citizens, and all they're here is to petition their government for change, and change in an important and emergency way, because this is a humanitarian issue. These people desperately need a safe place to go.
Chris, well, good luck on your 32nd night, and thanks for your patience with us.
33rd, get it right, 33.
Is it really 33rd? 33. I'll have to count them again. Well, keep it up, man.
Get on that. All right, peace, man.
You too. We only have about 4 minutes left in the show, although I don't know if Dennis is coming in. He may still be away, so maybe we'll just steal a few more minutes if his sub-host comes in late or comes in at all. There, you know, since free radio is not on the air, some folks may be choosing not to come in.
You're going to have dead time, Robert, just because it's not broadcasting the way it used to? That's disheartening.
Yeah, well, that's where we're at. We need people who are willing to, you know, front the transmitter, and that it hasn't come for the last month and a half. Hopefully it will. If you've got some place you would, you know, we need a high tree, we need a roof, we need some place on the west side, north side, or east side, Santa Cruz, though, not downtown, where we can put the antenna up, a dry, locked, secure space for the transmitter we can visit for maintenance and repair, access to a 15-amp outlet for electricity, access to the internet, and we'll be ready to go. We'll provide the UPS uninterruptible power supply for the internet source and router, and $50 per month for electricity usage, plus tips on how to deal with intimidation from federal agencies like the FCC.
But you know what I was thinking? In the meantime, people could just be sharing their computers like they do at Peace Camp 2010.
Well,
just share your receiver, whether it's a computer or what.
I don't think
the radio should let us.
They're not hearing us at Peace Camp 2010, as far as I know.
What I'm saying is you can get it through the computer, and people could share their computers.
I'm not going to share my computer.
Well, some people could share their computers.
Indeed. Well, there's a lot more that I've got tape of, although it's not clear that it's going to go out anywhere that's going to be heard, except by those who have computers or are, you know, going out of their way to access these broadcasts. But I'm glad to have you in the studio, Linda. I'm glad you came down with us and you have such a clear recollection of a very important point, that not only would they not give a statement that there's no shelter and hasn't been any shelter since the armory closed, but they also...
Well, he said there wouldn't be any until it opened, but that means that, too.
The homeless service center is, in fact, not serving the homeless. It may be a center for some kinds of other things, but it isn't in this situation serving homeless people, in my view.
I would put it even more broadly. The shelter is an indicator of something system-wide and society-wide, where if you're an able-bodied person who's pretty much taking care of yourself and you just need a little contact with the so-called mainstream world, too bad. You know? they're just going to ignore you or shun you or throw you out if you come there like this morning. And if there's enough wrong with you, then they'll help you, because who gets the money from that?
Well, I think the way to respond to that is to have a larger group of people go over there, perhaps with their sleeping bags, and maybe do a sleep-in at the shelter. You never can tell.
It's been done before.
It hasn't been done for a while. Last time it was done was New Year's Eve in 1989. Actually, no. Robert Steffen used to sleep on the porch of the shelter. He was arrested 3 times, or maybe it was twice, for trespass at the homeless shelter because they wouldn't let him sleep. They had no shelter for him elsewhere. He thought, well, if it's a homeless shelter, I should be able to sleep there. Silly boy that he was. Robert Steffen is better known as the pink guy. He used to walk very slowly up and down Pacific Avenue. He also sat in a bag and ran for president in 1999 in front of bunny shoes.
A one-man force.
Yes, or farce, as the case may be.
Complacency.
Well, I think that we're actually hitting 8 o'clock in 3 seconds, and in the studio is the notorious R. Duck, sitting in for the evil Uncle Dennis, who's, he's carousing while the transmitter comes down. I don't know what to say. The evil, and actually, he's probably done more for the station than almost anybody.
Long live free radio.
Yeah, so perhaps you'll be more successful than I in soliciting transmitter space.
Oh, everybody's got a pull. It doesn't matter who succeeds. The word has to be like a blanket of snow.
Well, it'd be really great if we could get some of that.
Because we're talking to people that own property and aren't often listening enough.
So, got some music you want to put on there, Arden? Do you want to do an introduction?
Do you have a segue song?
Sure I do. I'll throw on a little something from the Liberal Shop of Horrors. That's the vanilla Capitol Steps. I think we'd better go forward to...
The group's called the Capitol
Let's
Steps.
Sometimes they call them the Capitol Steps. Let's see. Let's go to Obama Mania, shall we?
Now, who out there wants to make more money? Give me a clap if you want to make more money. Who wants to make it? Oh, of course you do. We all do.
That's why we're here, to share an interesting opportunity with you. The chance to make a boatload of money by jumping onto the bandwagon known as Obama Mania.
That's right. Zillions of Americans witnessed the Obama inauguration, but watching history wasn't enough. People wanted a souvenir, and there were plenty of options. Obama t-shirts, hats, posters, bobbleheads, mouse pads, Obama pajamas, and the list goes on and on and on and on.
You know, when I saw souvenir candles, I wondered, are they Obama scented? Could my living room really smell like Obama?
So, after genius here spent $100 on some Yes We candles, we decided we needed to jump on this bandwagon and make some money for ourselves.
That's right. So the first thing I did is I took that pet rock that I foolishly bought back in the 80s. I slapped the president's name on it, and I sold the pet Barack for $59.99.
Oh, yes, yes. Then we ventured into alternative Obama bumper stickers, including our bestseller, Move Over, God, Obama is my co-pilot now. Personal hygiene products. So now you can use Reverend Right Guard deodorant to protect against inspiration. Mm-hmm.
Then the next thing we did is we moved into food products. How about starting your day with a delicious bowl of Cheerio Obamas? A delicious source of calcium and change.
That's right. Hey, don't forget to add some delicious Yes We Can! Believe it's not butter.
And for dessert, don't forget the delicious Oreo Obamas. Black enough to make history, white enough to make Republicans feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so everybody out there, I want you to pick up your phone, give us a call right now, and if you are not 100% completely satisfied, we will refund all of your money in quarters. Now that's change you can believe in. Thank you. Good night.
And here she is, the hottest woman to ever govern the coldest state, Sarah.
And a good night it is here on FRSC, the finest radio in Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM in our dreams. freakradio.org. What was that? Robert Norris stepping out here. We just had heard a little something. Liberal shop of horrors.
Obama mania.
On the Capitol steps. Nicely done. Another fine program. But we're just plugging ahead here. Out off the air or not. If you have a place for us to get some fresh air, we sure would appreciate our antenna there. High up in the air above Santa Cruz's vast sweeping coastal range. If you can help us out, that sure would be nice. Send an email to, where do they do? Can they send an email? I don't think we have. Go to the website.
Freakradio.org.
Yeah, freakradio.org. Sure would help. Appreciate your help. You can give a call and leave a message at 831-427-4523. Or you can just leave a message right here with me. I'm the host of the R. Duck Show here sitting in for Uncle Dennis and the Cream to the Dregs. Just wrapped up, a heck of a program. What do you think, Robert Norris? You do that 2 times a week, huh? Wednesdays?
Sundays.
Right around 6 to 8 and Sunday mornings. Check it out.
From 9:30 to 11 or so.
To 1.
Yeah, and then longer if I can get away.
And longer with encouragement. So give him a call and help him out. We're all homeless now.
Or homely.
Well, not really. That's just a poor exaggeration. But our antenna is, once again, give us a hand if you can. 831-427-3772. We'll get you right here into the station's nerve center. So, starting off with a little bit of music here. If I can. For the music of the 60s and 70s. Let's see what we got queued up. If this crazy old thing works, got a little kinks. Stay tuned.
When you pass me by, you didn't look my way. But one thing I know, our love is here to stay. And you still want me, and you still want me, I know.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape.